Yo, check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be now cast.
Third culture kids, where the concept of the Dukan is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey, yo, what's up, people?
What up, nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
You're tuned in to the Dukan show. Stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping their identity, their creative expression, and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
Welcome to your tribe.
It has been a minute, and we are back with another Dukan show. Why am I like radio presenter?
Why are you radio
this?
Presenting our show?
Yo,
because that's not what
but
we
no,
do.
No, because it's been that long since I last been on a mic, and like I don't know, I went back to my training of radio.
Yeah,
but
you
anyway.
Went back to the default, which is that voice. You know that voice.
Yeah.
Do late night DJ radio voice
at this time in the morning.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dukan Show with your host, OT. And I've got the beautiful Reem here on the mic, joining me, keeping it nice and spicy and lovely. What's up, Reem? How are we feeling?
When you call things spicy, it's always strange at 10 a.m.
Right?
Things at 10 a.m. are never spicy.
Hey, unless y'all been still up since last night. I mean, hey, welcome.
Walk of shame. I see you. I see you. We are here.
In a moment, we'll be taking a break and you're going to be hearing some great tunes by the beautiful
Taquito.
Taquito. In his latest track with Marvin Gaye.
Imagine that collab.
Yo, I'll be here for it. How you been?
I've been really good. I've gone through a transformation yet again. Basically, the Dukan Show episodes are Reem going through transformations.
By the way,
that's
I think every time we go on a hiatus and come back, you've gone through some... It's always some transformation or the other, and you're back in a game.
I'm living life. I realize I live life completely. Like I do not waste time, or I just I learned that during this recent trip that I took to the Philippines. Haven't seen my family. And
which, by the way, for context, this was supposed to be a 7-day trip,
right?
That ended up being
a 3-week trip.
3 weeks only?
I added an additional 2 weeks. I know you missed me, but I really only was away for 3 weeks and nothing changed about Dubai.
No, a lot
it stayed exactly the same.
Dubai changes in its own ways.
Right.
I think 3 weeks away from Dubai is a long time away from Dubai.
But I didn't really travel as much because of the pandemic. So I didn't, we used to leave the country every 2 months at a minimum. We were in and out at least 6 times a year. So now I just kind of condensed all of that into one like power packed family trip where,
right.
To be honest with you, contemplating who I am as a Filipino woman is a really interesting conversation because
let's talk about that. I feel like because this trip has been a lot about you and the Philippines in various aspects. One is Reem with family.
Yeah.
And seeing your grandmother again.
Yeah.
And that side of the family that
the
you
Don.
Haven't, which you haven't been. You haven't gone to see in a while. And yes, mm-hmm. your grandma is a definite Don. Like,
she's
I mean,
the
videos and the photos we've been seeing of her, the closest reference I can provide the listeners is Don Corleone, if he was a Filipino woman. Like,
yeah.
through and through. There's
you don't
this
mess
very
with my grandmother.
Calm.
Yeah.
This calm and zen about her. But at the same time, you can't with her.
No, you can't. You can't. Not with my grandmother. But
you know?
So, yeah.
So there's that side
there's
of
that
your
side.
Trip. And then the other side of like Reem discovering herself and Reem reconnecting with the island and Reem being Reem, but also Reem working on a book. So I feel like there, which we'll get to.
This
but
is a very multifaceted conversation.
This is going to
yeah.
be a great piece. But yeah, so let's tackle those because you had like 3 things that went down through this journey.
Right. So the first one being my family, seeing
right.
my grandmother. Let's just, for anyone listening, for all of you guys here, as you're aging, your family is too. It's a simple, like, that's the fact. We cannot change that. There's nothing we can do about it. And so time is really the only thing I can give. I was worried after the pandemic, not having seen my grandmother for 3 years, that I would have a strange warped memory of her, like that I wouldn't see her in her reality right now. So, and being in her presence, being in the presence of the women in my life, reminds me where I come from, my ancestry and the pillars of what I believe in, because that's where I became who I am, is around the women in my family.
What are some of these pillars? Because clearly your family is like matriarchal through and through.
Right. So yeah, my family is matriarchal. It's something we're very proud of. My mom's family. So the Filipino side of my family. Or the Filipina side of me, rather. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they are matriarchal. The pillars of our family are, first of all, charity. It is mandatory. It's not an option, because I grew up witnessing and bearing testimony and bearing witness to the value of giving back into the community. My grandmother genuinely believes that every single success we have as a family can be rooted into the kindness that has been put into the community. Mm. It is a religious thing for her, but for me, it's much more of a spiritual, I don't even want to say karmic. It is genuinely where I'm happiest. I'm happiest when I'm in the service of others. Mm. And I learned that was a pillar of our family during this last trip. The other is that we are all courageous. So my grandmother, when my mom said she wanted to strike out into the world and be an air flight, be a cabin crew for Yemen Air, which no one even knew where Yemen was, my grandmother didn't cry. She said, go. That's, if you think of the small island where this woman comes from, how, you know, many people are afraid, they hold their daughters close. My mother and grandmother both agreed we were going to be courageous. And that set off the trajectory of my life into the adventure that it's been. So courage is a pillar of our family. Faith, an unbelievable faith in, when you're down and out and completely in despair, you have to have a sense of faith that everything will be okay, that tomorrow brings a better, the sun rises tomorrow. Without fail, the sun is going to rise tomorrow. That is a pillar of our family. And finally, forgiveness in all its different human confusion, we exercise forgiveness in many ways because we make many mistakes as we're navigating life. So those have come to the fore, for me.
Right. So courage, faith, forgiveness, charity.
Yeah. And it's actually charity, courage, forgiveness.
Oh, it has to be in that order.
Charity is first. There's no debate about it. There's a big sigh in front because I always wonder about, when is to what end is this altruism? Is it for me or is it for the person I'm helping? According to my grandmother, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. God is God and you have to help. If you have, you give. And we are here we're here for each other, not to be here by yourself navigating the world. We're here for each other.
Right. So did anything change that perspective that you had going there and spending time with her versus actually spending time with her?
So when you're working in Dubai, and this is what happened to me. I was very insular during the pandemic. The episodes before this will indicate the things that I went through. When I came back to my grandmother, I was reminded of the amount of effort we need to put into community work. You need to take 10% of your life and put that into community work. I look at how they spend their hours and how they spend their days, and because I like to calculate things in resource allocation, 10% of her life is spent in charity. And I feel like it's a strange thing because we have zakat, there's zakat, the idea of in the Muslim faith that you give 10% to charity. And that's a pillar of Islam. It's not something you can negate if you want to be a good Muslim. Yeah. So
the percentage is against weight of gold, but
I mean, yes, yeah, but there's a percentage is what I'm saying.
We'll go with the point of there's a percentage.
There's a percentage. Yeah. And so if you have a percentage of your life that you're supposed to give to charity, then you also have to have the other side of that, which is the faith that you don't have to seek. If you decide you're going to do charity, by the way, you don't have to seek it. It will show up. The things you need to help, who you need, whether it's a dog that's been abandoned or whether it's somebody that just needs you to listen, whether it's a friend that you actually needs you to be there physically, that's all part of doing good in the world, right?
Yeah.
So it was reaffirmed when I was there under no small terms, under no small. And actually, can I talk about my mini documentary?
Please.
May I talk about this? Okay.
There's, for the privileged few that have been part of this, on behalf of Reem, you're welcome. It wasn't my idea. Obviously, it was Reem's idea. I was on the receiving end, just as you were. But This was a very interesting piece. Please elaborate.
So I traveled by myself, which is something I actually love doing. And in the past few years, I haven't had an opportunity to travel by myself for a very long time. And this was my first solo trip in a long time. And one of the things that I am is a storyteller, without fail. So I thought, I did not want to share. My family is not for public consumption. And actually, we talked about this in very early episodes of Dukkan.
We don't do
the things that I love extremely dearly are actually not available online. They are, you don't see my dog often. You don't see my family. You actually, most people don't know what my sister looks like. My brothers, one of them you'll know, the other you don't. So I believe that privacy in this world that we operate in right now is such a high currency. It's such a high value currency that I decided during the trip that I was going to document what I was going through, but I was only going to do it for a select group of people on a broadcast list because your feedback is not welcome. And I just wanted a place to kind of put my thoughts with people that would understand that maybe it's not perfect. It's not a perfect video. It's not perfect writing. It just is what it is. And this turned into the most wonderful social experiment. Like, I began to receive messages. You know who you are. Like, it wasn't a big list. It's like 20 people. It was not a very big list. But what ended up happening was that I began to have conversations with my dear friends and family about things we'd never talked about before. With their views on poverty, their views on child mortality rate. Yes, these are things I covered. But also their views on family and their views on charity. And I adored this idea of a closed and safe space to articulate all the things that I was going through. And actually, I think I'll open it up. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, I think I'll do another broadcast for the Dukkan audience.
Yeah, for our next trip.
Yeah. It is a closed... By the way, it's going to be closed. It's not something that I'm ever going to post online.
So unless they got your digits.
So unless,
or you got their digits.
Yeah, so if you do want to be a part of the next one, please just DM us and I'll add you to the list. But it is really a personal introspection of what I was going through. And you get to see me, see my grandmother. You get to... It's not... It is really just pure, raw things. And I love that. I think the world needs more of that, you know?
All right. So that was a part of your trip and we plugged in your, we should come up with a name for this. Like Reem's little broadcast.
It's my broadcast list.
That's what we're committing to. Fine.
It's exactly what it is, right?
And then the other side of it now was Reem connecting with Reem. Because as you said earlier, like you haven't traveled on your own for quite a few years.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was officially your first trip, solo dolo.
Yeah.
And after you spent time with family, you actually left to spend time with just you.
Yeah.
Right?
I did.
You were on a different island. You were doing your own thing. You had a boxing coach that you found.
Okay.
So like, and there was a lot. I feel like there was a lot. Because that was like 2 weeks of your trip.
Yes. So I've now come to realize that I can no longer separate my mental health, pillars from my travel. So we used to travel and I used to stop working out. I used to eat whatever I wanted. And I realized this really impacted my mental health. So this time around, I found a boxing coach and I decided that I was going to go stay in a really beautiful place and write this book that I'm writing right now.
Which we'll get to.
And this whole situation led me to understand that I cannot take a break. If exercise is a pillar of my mental health happiness, then I must integrate it into the way I travel. But what it also did was gave me an avenue, which is the work that we do is so amazing. It gave me an avenue into the culture, into the communities. I was able to make friends in the gym. I met people that I actually knew from Dubai in the gym. And that's why I believe actually find a hobby and use that to travel. Like I noticed the B-boys do it. Like they do the each one teach one thing and they offer each other their couches. MCs do it as well. I think it changes the way you
MCs
travel.
MCs do it? I haven't seen MCs do this the way B-boys.
No, B-boys like
B-boys are
own
still
it.
Committed to doing this till
day. For the culture, right?
Through and through. Yeah. MCs, I mean, they were, but I don't know if they still do it.
I don't know, but I just remember the ones I knew were always, their like doors were, their couch was always available if you needed a place to stay. Yeah. And I think that I didn't need a, I didn't need a couch.
Tak is the only MC that I know that still does it. Like the only one that will offer you his couch.
Ride or die.
And he'll offer you his dog for a walk.
Right? Do you know? So like, I just feel, while I didn't need a place to stay, I was able to like go into the community, understand what they like love and believe in, who are they when the tourists are not around? And that made it such a deep and wonderful trip because I began to reconnect to my Filipino like heritage and roots and made new friends, which was amazing. It was just, I couldn't say enough great things about it, you know? Yeah.
And it was great, I think, watching it from the outside, like being part of your broadcast list with the, like even with the time you fell sick. And
oh my God. I got sick.
It was just food poisoning, I think. You were going to die.
I remember I called you and I was like, I cannot die in this hotel room. This cannot be how I go. But you go when you go, I guess. But I did, you know, when you're traveling alone and you're a girl, you realize how vulnerable you are.
Right.
I would ask the question, like at one point someone broke into my hotel room, walked in and then walked out. And I called OT
too,
and I was like, yo, what should I do? And I actually called three people, like my sister Solo Dolo, OG traveler.
My
sister is the number one traveler, like she's gone through all of Latin America. She's amazing. And I called her, I called you. And when I sat down and I called my mom I sat down and had a conversation about it with myself. And I was like, if I was a guy, I would never leave this room. Someone just walked in and walked out. That was it. There was nothing taken. My flip-flops were out of order. I was in the shower when this person walked in. So
thing,
I never saw this person.
Yeah, because based on your telling of the story, I'm like, could have been room service. They didn't know
it
you were in there.
It could have been housekeeping. It could have been room service. Or it could have been someone testing if they could get in my room easily.
Either or.
So am I going to risk that third, like that one third, you know, am I going to risk my peace of mind? Right. Yeah. And it is a thing in a lot of countries that were heavily impacted by the pandemic. The crime rates have risen because the poverty rates have risen.
Right.
So I just felt really unnerved, you know? And so I moved rooms and then I paid going back to the gym. I paid the Spanish mafia in the gym to sit outside my room. I paid two guys to sit outside my room so I could sleep.
Yo, only Reem will find a cartel.
Yeah. And they're like, don't worry, we got you. I'm like, I just need sleep. Like at that point I was exhausted. And I knew if I left late at night, the hotel to go to another hotel, I would have not known. I just would have felt unsafe all the way through. So luckily, because I was in the gym, someone was like, let's just move you to the beach. The beach is easier because it's less accessible and all of that stuff. And it really made my trip. That move really made my trip because I was suddenly stuck in the middle of sunsets, the most beautiful sunrises.
And you built a whole community with this workout, the whole gym. Like they mobilized to help when you got sick. You were saying
they sent
you food and bananas. And
the people sent me activated charcoal, food, bananas. It was just honestly the most wonderful thing. And I do believe we are taken care of. Like I just believe that. I believe if you trust in the world, you will be taken care of. And there is something about that comes through when you're traveling alone. You know, you have to have faith.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. And to pivot one last bit on the story, let's talk about your book.
Oh, my book. Okay.
So I feel like, no, that was too excited.
Reem, you stop being so excited about it because I'm in the pits with it at the moment.
Mm. So Reem, please do tell us, as we understand that you have a book that you're currently working on.
I am.
Do elaborate.
I don't like to call myself an author, but I'm writing a book.
We'll do it after the book is done.
Yeah. The book is a fictional novel, but it has all of the work we've done in Dukan is going to be integrated into it. A book about, you know, it is a story that is based loosely on my mom's life and my life, but I'm using it as a tool to teach the world about who we are. And I'm part of a writer's program, and writing a book is the most solitary experience. And it is the most, I can't express how much it forces you to face yourself. And I'm behind my word count at the moment. So this conversation
is
stressed.
What is the word count for what deadline?
So the word count is 80,000 words by October. And let's not talk about where I'm at.
No, we're not going to go there.
We're not going to go there. But I also know how I am as a writer. I tend to think a lot more than I write. And then suddenly I sit down and it all just kind of comes out.
Okay.
So I'm usually processing.
So you're not really behind. It's just that your methodology is different.
Yes. Or the interesting thing about writing something like this is that you have to trust that when you're a vessel for the story, that the story is in the world somewhere and it's going to come through you. And right. It's only going to come through like almost like a portal. You're just going to write this thing. And I think musically people feel that when they're in flow.
Right.
Yeah. So getting to flow state is the most challenging thing because there's so much crap in your brain before that.
Yeah.
And so I'm writing probably 3, 4, 5 pages that just get tossed out. And then 6th page somewhere is something that's sense. Worth, you
so
know, keeping.
Interesting because like, so I was listening to Shannon Sharp's podcast, Club Shay Shay, which,
yeah,
by the way,
Club Shay Shay is,
I think
it's
the dopest podcast
name. It's a really great name, first of all.
And in his last episode, he had the comedian Earthquake on his show. And Earthquake is one of the probably very few comedians that is on. He doesn't write on paper. He writes his comedy in his head.
Yeah, I could see that.
He'll go up on stage and flow off the top. And that's such an unusual skill.
Yeah.
Even the world's best comedians feel the need to write it down somewhere. And he, at some point in his career, he was telling this story. So at some point in his career, he tried to sort of assimilate to the ways of his comedian colleagues telling him, no, this is how it's done.
Right.
You should write it down. And he tried to write it down. And he was talking about his relationship with Steve Harvey as a mentor. And Steve Harvey was like, no. Like, look, if that's your way, that's your way. You don't have to accommodate their methods.
Yeah, of
this
course.
Is your method.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is your style. This is your system. You do that. It's like, and Earthquake being Earthquake, he's like, yeah, I'm like the Jay-Z of comedy. You know?
So, and in many ways, actually, I think he is.
Yeah.
I think he is. But so, interestingly enough, I do work extensively on my memory. It is something that I exercise. I believe that I am a memory athlete. It is something that I work on every day. And I imagine I could house probably a chapter or two in my head. I could
before
do
writing it down.
Before but, writing it down.
So
and you've seen me do that. Like,
yeah.
You've seen me just kind of process and then it's stored. And then all I need to do is just like.
So then that's the thing. Like, you don't actually have to write X number per day, but rather kind of go through your process.
Right.
And then one day you'll sit and fly through 12 pages.
Right. And honoring that is challenging, right? Because when we do anything that's a craft, you want to hone your craft. And the methodology of honing your craft is set usually long before you.
Right.
So they say, write, you know, like a drawing, you write pen, you draw pencil things first, and then those become hard lines, and then that becomes colored in. What if you color in first?
Yeah.
What if that's your vibe, right? How do you find that out if you're going to art school and they're teaching you this is the methodology, right? So I think it is about being a true artist in this sense. I don't want this book. This book is a reflection of us, me, the journey. And I don't want anyone to dominate over this creative, my creative process. And I realize that I'm the bottleneck. I'm the problem. I'm the. So that's where I'm at with the book. If anybody else is writing a book, I feel you so deeply right now because it is not the one. But
hey, I don't know what that feels like, but I get it when I'm writing strategies.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I always ask for a 2-week window on a strategy, which sometimes feels like too much depending on timelines. But it's just because it's the strangest thing. I don't have a set methodology. Sometimes right off the brief, I'll watch a video, I'll be watching Netflix,
yeah.
or I'll be listening to music and something would come to mind. And this moment, something unlocks. And then I will build the whole thing within a span of hours.
Yeah, I've seen you do it.
You know? And then other times, I will be lost for 10 plus days where I have no idea what I'm doing at all. I'm completely clueless. Until the last second, and then suddenly, and then something
unlocks
then, right? So, yeah, it's just there's no set method for me. It's just, and I think that's the thing with creative crafts, like because the output is creative, right? And I think
in
some form, you know, even engineers or people who are not necessarily quote unquote in creative industries are creative because technically what you're doing is problem solving.
Right.
If you're writing a book, if you're trying to solve a math equation, if you're, you know, trying to write rap lyrics, whatever it is that you're, is a creative output when you have a brief or you have something that you're trying to solve, that's a creative output. And finding your creative element or finding your state of flow is not, I don't think it's the same path every time.
No, it never. I don't think it ever was meant to be.
Yeah.
I just one of the great things about the book is it got me. It stopped. I'm not talking about business as much anymore. I'm talking more about people. We talk a lot about business, like a lot, because it's what we do. And I've loved that the book has given me a new worldview. I don't talk about business as much. Yeah. I feel like, you know, I'm there present when the business, I've talked about business for 12 years. You know, I've put my time in. But now this gives me a whole new worldview.
Right. And I think it's so different wonderful. In the sense that as well, like, yes, we talk about business a lot, but we're in the business of people. So we're always into like culture and humans and behavior.
We do. But if you listen to us, we talk about business a lot. No. Even in our conversations. Yeah. Even in regular life.
And I think because that's where we do most of that work. Right?
Yeah, possibly. It's
that focus always kind of comes into a business space as opposed to just like, hey, this is what people are doing. Or like, I don't know, it's a different culture now. Whereas now when it's a book, there is a new storytelling angle and a new muscle that you're unlocking or have unlocked in that exercise
100%.
Of storytelling. So like it's a complete new avenue of storytelling and a whole new style.
It comes down to something really simple. Today, someone asked you, hey, how are you doing, OT? And you were like, doing well. The business is doing well. Like you immediately…
You always
say that. You talk… You don't say, I'm doing well, full stop. You say, I'm doing well. We're doing this in Dukan. Yeah. This is what's happening. They didn't ask you about Dukan.
No, but always an upsell.
Right. No, yeah. That's how… And so, when I started writing the book, I realized I stopped doing that. I just said, I'm doing well, or today I'm not feeling this way, or today I really am in my feelings, like, so much, you know? And that, for better or worse, that's what's…
And I'm thinking, in some ways I'm detached from that in that sense. Where it's like, no, I'm doing good. And then my feelings are related
into the business.
Business is, how it's performing and what I'm doing in it. Because, we're doing great.
Season. The caliber of the conversations that I've been having are much more high on the EQ.
Right.
Like much higher on the emotional quotient of what I'm doing.
I think it's much higher on you getting in touch with you, which you have not done for quite a while up until like 2020 and you started going through down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, everyone should get to know themselves. You should get into the ring and get to know yourself, you know? And I started, did I talk about kickboxing and all this MMA stuff that I've been doing on the show? I don't think
whether
I have.
You have or not, let's do it.
Let's play this.
Eye of the Tiger. Let's go.
Let's do this.
Let's go, Rocky.
I was feeling extremely uncomfortable. Yeah, I was feeling extremely uncomfortable during the beginning of the year. And I decided to lean into
that. That was November, December 2021. That's when your journey started.
Right.
I got you on a timeline.
Oh, thank God for OT. I was feeling a lot of discomfort and I leaned into the discomfort. I decided to find the most uncomfortable thing. And I got a PT who focuses a lot on MMA and kickboxing and Muay Thai and all of that. And I learned how to punch things and I learned how to kick things.
The way you tell the story is horrible.
Oh, really?
For a storyteller, that is horrible.
Anyways, please tell my story for me, colonizer.
I am officially the first black colonizer.
Go.
Yeah. I'm going to add that to my LinkedIn profile. The first black colonizer up in this. So 3 days a week after every class, Reem would call or send a voice note complaining about how much she hates us. And this is the worst thing. And
I'm telling the story.
You did not tell this right. Okay. And then there are sound effects that come along with it, like, I hate this. No?
He's not lying.
There we go.
So there are no lies currently.
So and then now, like, oh my God, you wanna go punch the bag? Like, wait, since when?
No.
When did we become this person?
I've gotten used to the discomfort. My discomfort threshold is quite high.
I am so impressed by your journey.
I danced for 6 hours at a pool party. I love that. 8 hours at a pool party.
But
I
you've
did
always
not
been
stop.
A dancer.
Yeah. This is what I love. Love. I write for easily 4 or 5 hours a day. I love that.
Right.
I hate. I do not like the feeling of MMA, kickboxing, anything to do with engaging violently with someone else. I do not like this. But it is the most technical dance I've ever encountered. I've never encountered something so technical physically. And the other thing is,
and the focus it requires.
If you have ADHD like me, this is a very valuable practice to put in place. When I say, hey, do you want to go hit the bag? It means there's a lot in my head and I'd like to just do one thing for an hour to get whatever it is that's bothering me out of my system. And I feel like this practice, strangely, is meditative. I did not know how meditative it could be.
I'm going to take the last moment of this podcast episode to say, Reem, I told you so.
You did tell me so. That's what great friends do. They tell you so. They wait until they're correct and then they launch it in your face in public.
Yes.
That's what great friends do.
And you're welcome.
This has been, I must admit, this past month has been a series of I told you so. I told you so's on me have been amazing.
Because like, we've been saying it for a minute.
Yeah. You have.
And it's like, don't worry, just keep going.
But you know what it is, and I recognize this. I'm always going to be uncomfortable with this because it's not how my body moves. It's not what I like to do. But am I going to stop doing it? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because
good for you.
It does make me a better athlete. It does make me a better person. And we don't stop something because it's uncomfortable. I'm not getting injured. So there's just because the only thing that's injured is my ego.
But also,
it's like a really badly bruised in the ICU right now.
No, but like seeing the transformation, seeing the improvements and like the discipline and the diligence and committing to it to something that's so uncomfortable is great. Because interesting enough, like even when we used to do the Zoom Ramadan, the Ken Gets Fit sessions, Coach Jalal, who's my boxing coach, was like, oh, you have Muay Thai. And you have never done anything remotely close to any martial arts of any sort.
No.
And for somebody like him to clock that you feel like Muay Thai and then seeing you drift into this universe of Muay Thai was so interesting.
It's been remarkable.
Like, the fact that he clocked it till now, I don't know how he saw it, but he did.
He's a coach that makes champions. Coach Jalal, to his credit, makes fighters into champions.
Then seeing you eventually picking it up, trying boxing, kickboxing, and finding your way into Muay Thai and seeing this journey of discomfort. at every step of the way. Despite all that, you're doing really, really well.
Thank you.
So well done.
Thank you. I love you. I appreciate it.
And congratulations. And this is my favorite I told you so of all time.
So just as a side note, I did also do 30 Days of Animal Flow, which I loved.
You did do that.
Yes, on Instagram. And I realized I love the practice of a daily challenge. So I need a new one. I definitely need a new one.
We're supposed to be doing capoeira with Coach Hudson.
For 30 days in a row.
We can do
every Thursday for sure.
Because that's how it started in Ramadan. But then you left and you were the plug.
I was the plug?
And Coach Hudson never showed up again.
Oh, my bad. Okay.
So let's bring that back.
Anyways, to that point, if you guys have a challenge, I would like to know it because I feel like…
Slide in Reem's DMs.
You can slide in my DMs or the Ken Media DMs because I don't check my DMs. That's where I am now. That's how zen I am. I don't even check my DMs. It's a vibe. I'm getting to zen. Anyways,
unlike that, Tack waits for the thirsty DMs. So he's always checking his shit.
Yeah, can offline, can someone explain thirst trapping to me?
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.